Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Here we go with the Thursday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and as you know, we're a half hour early for a reason today, and luckily it just happened to work out. So Schomburg Stu has broke down the entire NBA draft for us. It starts for an hour, and luckily he's here to review that with you. Thank God you're here today, Stu.
Yeah, it's a good thing that you got me on, John, because we're going to go down the list step by step, especially with number 7 in the draft choices.
All right. If you'd like to call in and talk to Stu or I about the draft or anything other than anything else sports related, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. But don't forget, there's also sportstimeradio.com. Those blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings. So if you missed yesterday's, you can swing on over there, check out what's going on. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you can hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to like that, please. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. You can find me on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time. If you can find Schomburg Stu out there, he's going to live tweet the NBA draft as well. So he will be all over it tonight. So you definitely got it made. Oh,
you guys want to bet on my choices? You're gonna be very wealthy.
Yeah, there's a
signs, right?
Yeah, you know. Well, you know, I think with as high as the NBA salaries are now, I don't think they any longer have to take pay cuts when they come from the college level into the NBA. But you know, it's definitely one of those things. So. We'll have to see. I mean, interestingly, I think, you know, we all have interest in number 7 with what the Bulls are going to do. There's been a couple different reports on which way they can go. I haven't seen or don't know enough about any of these guys to know who's really going to help. I mean, you know, obviously we see all the highlights. They all look really good. Was there one guy you might have been leaning for that you thought they should take?
There is. The only thing I'm concerned about is the fact that he was injured last season and only played in a couple of games. But if he's healthy, he would be a terrific choice for the Bulls. But that's the key thing that's going to concern everybody. Is this guy healthy? Of course, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, I'm guessing you're talking about Michael Porter Jr.
Who else? The forward from Missouri. And naturally, yeah. Of course, it's a risk. There's always a risk when something like this happens, when a guy has a serious back injury, although, of course, he's telling everybody he's healthy. He's ready to go. But
I know there were some oddities there. Didn't he skip some workouts and not give some teams his medical information? So,
yeah, he canceled a workout last week. He had a strained hip, which is unrelated to his back problem. But is he going to be an injury prone before he even starts in the NBA? It was a concern.
Yeah, you have to wonder, because what, he played all of 3 games last year?
That's it.
And I know there have been some reports just coming out lately that there's a chance he may actually slip all the way out of the top 10, which could be a steal for, you know, a team if he's healthy and, you know, you're the team that just happens to grab him, you know, at, say, 11 or 12. I know there's reports that the Clippers would take him at 12 if he was there. You know, I mean, obviously he could be a huge steal, but, you know, like you said, man, if he's hurt and he's going to be hurt constantly – boy, it could be bad for you.
Yeah, well, the Clippers certainly can do some good in this draft because they actually have 2 top 15 picks. I think they're picking 12 and 13. So they're going to get a couple of decent ball players for sure.
Yeah, they are back to back. You know, I mean, there is some interesting stuff, you know, at the top. You know, it looks pretty clear now that DeAndre Ayton is going to go number one to Phoenix. He's the kid from Arizona that they had the big uproar about when it came out. I don't remember if he was paid $100,000 or somebody was paid $100,000 to make sure he went to Arizona. He won't have to worry about that now because obviously he'll be getting a whole lot more than $100,000. But
he
looks
consensus number one. Yeah, he's a consensus number one. He's a center, and I think that Phoenix will probably wind up taking him most likely.
Yeah, and you know, and then it looked like number two. I'm trying to remember who owns number two. Is it Sacramento at number two? I believe.
Yes,
are they still hanging?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, from what I've heard and kind of read, they're going to take Marvin Bagley Jr. But then, you know, three is where it gets kind of interesting, because I've been reading a lot of reports that the Atlanta Hawks want Trae Young, but I don't think they're going to pick him at three. The reports are they're going to take that European guy, Luka Doncic, and then swap picks with the Mavericks at five, where the Mavericks should be able to take Young because he should still be sitting there. That may be the first trade. You know, the one thing I hate about the NBA draft is they don't announce the trades until afterwards. So all these picks go through and the guys come out and put the hat on and hold up the jersey. And then the next thing you know, they're on another frickin' team. So.
Yeah, and this has happened too many times. It's rather annoying when that occurs.
So, that may be the first.
How about Bamba? What do you think about Bamba? Who's going to take him? Toronto?
What was weird is Memphis wanted him at four, but he has clearly stated that he does not want to go there. You know, so everybody kind of thought he was going to end up with Dallas at five. So, you know, that's where that scenario, it should get really interesting about right there with, you know, what Atlanta does. You know, if they take Doncic, there's probably a trade in the works. But yeah, you got to think, I mean, if you're Memphis, you got to take the best guy and then just kind of convince him that this is where he needs to be, right?
Right. And this guy can play not only center, I think he could play forward as well, right? Hasn't he done a little bit of both?
Yeah, he actually released a new video of him shooting three-pointers with a different shooting style that everybody was saying was much more effective. So, you know, and that's what the NBA is all about now is, you know, how is shooting threes, of course. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting. The first the first one's a given, but I'm a little up in the air about the next picks. I'm wondering if the Kings, for example, might go with Doncic as a second choice, but I'm not 100% sure on that one.
You know, I know they liked him early, but when that first news came out, he said if they took him, he would stay in Europe. So I don't know, you know, if or how any of that works. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
I'm
we'll
sure he's well paid in Europe, but I don't think he'll be as well paid as he would be paid in the NBA. So that's
yeah. You know, and oddly, the pick I haven't heard much about is like what Orlando's going to do at six in front of the Bulls. You know, I know, you know, they were another team. I read that they had some trade talks with Atlanta, but I don't think it went anywhere because, you know, they were talking about swapping Kent Bazemore for the pick. And that just doesn't seem like equal value to me unless Atlanta's giving them something else in return.
No. I'm wondering if they would grab Trae Young, and I'm not sure if that's a great pick at number six for them.
Yeah, I keep hearing everybody tell me that, you know, he's Steph Curry, but I guess I just saw too much of him in the late season when he couldn't make anything, and you know, once teams started defending him, which luckily they don't do in the NBA, so he may be able to get his shot off. He just didn't impress me late in the season there. So I know he was huge early, and I think he may have led the NCAA in scoring. I think he averaged about 30 points a game. But
yeah,
there's
he certainly should go down.
Nothing there.
I, Originally, I think he would have probably been in the top three or four, but I think he slipped down. But definitely he's going to be in the top 10 in terms of picks.
Yeah, and then, you know, the other guy who's going to factor in really early is going to be the kid from Michigan State. That it's Jaren Jackson, you know, Jackson Jr.
Jaren Jackson Jr., yeah. He might go with Atlanta. There's a good possibility he'll go with Atlanta if he's available at number three. But once again, you mentioned there were some deals that Atlanta had in the works, so that might negate that possibility.
Yeah, depending on, you know, like I've seen a lot of the mock drafts have him going to Memphis at four, just because of kind of the situation with Mo Bamba. But, you know, I mean, they still got Marc Gasol hanging around there. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if Jackson can go out and play the four. So I'm not sure how that kind of worked out. I know he's a shot blocker, but, you know, in today's NBA, I don't know how much of a shot that really has anymore, does it?
Not anymore. But, of course, Gasol is no longer a youngster. He could be winding down his career. I've always had a very productive career in the NBA, but he's been around a while. So they may actually opt for Jackson. It'll be quite interesting. The first six or seven picks are really interesting this year.
Yeah, I do find it humorous that everybody talks about how the NBA is going small and, you know, all this. And I think one of the mock drafts I saw, all but like one of the guys in it is 6'7" or taller. So, you know, I'm kind of like, oh, okay.
Maybe 6'7" is not considered the small in the NBA.
Yeah, you know. So, but yeah, you know, I mean, you know, a couple of the guys are 7 foot, and then, you know, Bamba and Ayton both measured over 7 feet at the combine, and Jackson is right, you know, 6'11¼". So,
I'll tell you one team that has a very interesting problem is that would be Cleveland, because you think he's officially gone, LeBron James? And if so, will they select, for example, Sexton maybe from Alabama? I don't know how they're going to go when they don't know the status right now of LeBron James for next season.
Yeah, it's so tough to, you know, kind of call with them. You know, I think when it comes up, I mean, whatever scouting they've done or whatever they've done, they've just got to look at the best player on their board and take them. And, you know, then just kind of play it, you know, by ear. I mean, you know, they're in a pretty good position picking eight. So, you know, they could really add a quality piece. The problem, of course, is, you know, is LeBron going to be there? And they did. The Cavaliers did come out today and say that they have no interest in dealing Kevin Love. You know, that had been talk there for years. They want to keep him around. You know, my guess is if LeBron does go, Love will be the guy they tried to build around.
And don't forget, Love is not he's 30. He's got many more years of productivity in the NBA. He did shoot, close to 18 points a game for them. And so he's a pretty good three-point shooter, too, maybe 40% plus in the three-point range. And he gets his rebounds a game. He might get 10 rebounds during the game for them. Of course, he did miss about 20 games or so because of that hand injury that he had.
Yeah, he's had some injuries. Since coming to Cleveland, I believe he's had some injury issues. When he was with Minnesota, I don't think he had as many when he was, you know, he was always their leading scorer and was putting up, you know, I think he averaged double-doubles with the Timberwolves. And, you know, I think as the main guy, he could easily slide back into that role. You know, obviously you play second fiddle to LeBron James because, you know, he's the best player in the NBA. I don't think that could be an issue. I mean, obviously they're not a title contender without LeBron. But, I think they would still be a playoff team if they added a quality piece and then kept Love around to be the top guy.
They would certainly be one of the three or four top teams in the East, at least.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, the East isn't, you know, still isn't that strong. I mean, you're looking at, you know, Boston, Toronto, you know, Philadelphia seems to be on track. But other than that, I mean, it's kind of a crapshoot from there.
Yeah, I take it you're not putting the Bulls in the top five, huh?
No. How many years we got of this rebuild left?
Too many. And
so
they've been rebuilding for the last 20 years since Jordan retired.
Yeah.
1 year, man. First, was it the first year or second year when Rose was the MVP that they won over 60 games during the regular season? Or close
yeah.
to that, around 60 games. Didn't do too well in the playoffs, though.
No. Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. You know, the Bulls do hold a second draft pick, and, you know, it's down the board. It's 22. And, you know, everything I see, oddly, all the mock drafts seem to agree that they're taking Chandler Hutchinson, who's a guard forward from Boise State. I don't know anything about him. I've got his stats here. He averaged 23.2 points a game with 8.9 rebounds and 4 assists. You know, he is 6'7". This is kind of when you're rebuilding, these are the keys. If you can hit on one of these later first rounders or, you know, even a second round pick that can come in and produce like, they landed Taj Gibson, who was, not a superstar, but he was a high quality player for them.
I
think if they can
do
it with both draft picks, that really makes a difference in your rebuild.
Yeah, I did see another report saying that rather than picking Hutchinson, they also were considering this guard from Maryland, Kevin Huerter. Is that how you pronounce his name? Supposed to be a good outside shooter when he played for Maryland. So, but that's speculation, I'm
sure.
Yeah,
I mean, all these mock drafts are just, guesswork when you get to a certain point. Especially now with all the international players and, all the other stuff that kind of goes on. What I did find interesting, well, maybe it's not interesting to everybody, but going through the one, obviously the NBA draft is really short. It's only 60 picks. It's just two rounds. I've read two or three of these, and I have not seen LiAngelo Ball's name in either of them. So the couple mock drafts I've read have him as going undrafted, and I'm wondering how Daddy is going to react to that because I haven't heard much from him lately.
Well, that really wouldn't surprise me if he went undrafted, and I don't think Daddy would be too happy about that, though, would he? Maybe.
No, well, in a way, it may work out for them because I guess it's probably better for him to go undrafted. Then maybe get grabbed at the end of the second, like the Sixers have the last pick in the draft and then it's the Suns. And I can't remember who has 58 here off the top of my head. But this way he could be a free agent and he wants to go to the Lakers. So it would give them the opportunity to just negotiate with the Lakers and sign there. So it may really be in his best interest to go undrafted instead of just ending up with another team and having going the fiasco of, listening to LeVar cry about he doesn't want to go here and all this crap. So.
Yeah, I'm tired of reading these wonderful comments that guy makes. Very annoying.
To say the least.
And
to be fair, he ruined the youngest kid's career. The youngest kid for a while looked like he was the best bunch, and he ruined his career by, he pulled him out of high school, took him overseas. He didn't produce overseas. Of course, it was the coach's fault. So, now he's trying to start his own league where, kids can come play without having to go to college. So, obviously his son will, be in that until until he can get drafted, which I think is still a couple years away. But, by the time he rolls around to the draft, you can pretty much guarantee he's going to be undrafted.
The NBA rule now, is that you either have to have 1 year of college or you have to be 19 before you can play in the NBA. Is that the two rules that they've come up with?
They do allow you to play, internationally instead of going to college. You can go play overseas, Puerto Rico, or wherever you want to go for 1 year. And that's why I'm you know, I think that's why LeVar Ball is trying to get this league up and going, because that would qualify as the year play-in for these kids. So they wouldn't have to, you know, we wouldn't have to deal with the one and done. They could just go to this league and, you know, get their year in and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
well, you're assuming there'd be a market for that kind of a league, though. Would there be a market for that league?
You know, I think a lot of kids would want to play in it. I mean, I don't know how they would draw or how, you know, anything like that would, you know, would kind of work out. But, you know, I definitely could see a lot of these one and done guys, instead of faking the college thing, you know, just going there and playing, because obviously they would have free will and less structure and, you know, wouldn't have to deal with some of the BS I'm sure they go through in college. So I could see it working. I don't know monetarily wise if it would work, but player wise, I could see a lot of players being interested in it.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't have to cram for finals then, would they?
Well, like, we honestly believe any of them do that anyway.
Yeah, for sure. But it should be interesting. It starts, what, 6 o'clock tonight? But is that when's the actual first ticket? Is that early?
Well, technically it's supposed to be, but, you know, they got to go through the introductions and everything. And I do like the fact that I believe the picks come faster. I think they only have it's either a 5 or a 7 minute clock. It's unlike the NFL where the first round is 15 minutes. And teams just kind of sit there and let the clock run out, even though they know who they're picking and they're not doing anything. So I do like the speed of it. And then I believe the second round is just 5 minutes. So you can actually watch the entire NBA draft if you choose to, because it moves along at a pretty good clip. But, yeah, I would guess the first pick will be made about, what, 6:15, maybe 6:20-ish, you know, after all the BS.
Right, so that means that the Bulls' pick would be, what, around 7, maybe, a little after 7?
Yeah, probably, depending on, you know, how the speed of things going. And, you know, the tough part is a lot of it is, you know, it's televised by the Mickey Mouse Network, and a lot of what drags it down is, you know, well, they have to break down every guy, and they want to show you highlights of every guy, and it just slows down the process so much. It's like, come on, you know, but they're paying a lot of money to, you know, cover NBA stuff, so they're trying to milk as much as they can out of it.
Well, I'm sure they get a fairly good audience for the draft, I would imagine.
Well, you know, to be fair, the draft is more exciting than the NBA Finals were.
Yeah, there wasn't too much this year, for sure.
You know, I mean, you know, not only did we know who was going to be in it before the season even started, it ended up being a sweep, and you know, we were kind of bored by it.
Yeah, the only game that was really competitive was the first game. And Cleveland blew that one.
Yeah. Cleveland probably should have won, but, you know, thanks to J.R. Smith.
Yeah, they should have won that. So they would have lost in 5 minutes instead of 4.
Yeah, oh, yeah, which is what I had. So J.R. Smith actually kind of shafted me because I had Golden State in 5. He screwed up my prediction.
You're probably more accurate in terms of predictions, sir. You should have been correct, but that's close though. That's pretty good. I'm sure
they did see Warren jersey. I don't know if you've seen this, but apparently somebody had offered $30,000 for it.
It wasn't me.
No, it wasn't me either. So I was just kind of like, okay, that's,
it's amazing though, the amount of money that is generated in some of these things, like those jerseys and other playing cards and everything else throughout the years. It's how people can spend that kind of money for that. Well, they put it in a trophy in their big trophy case in their man cave. Is it worth it? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, like something like that, I just wonder, you know, like Dan was explaining to me yesterday, he found a Star Wars hat online that they were selling for 30% off on the Lids website. He got it for $13 and change. On eBay, they're going for $75, so he can actually turn around and swap that for a pretty solid profit.
Yeah.
I'm thinking if you buy the J.R. Smith jersey for say it goes for $30,000, does it go up in value? I mean, is there a market for that jersey? I mean, just because he had it on when he made a huge faux pas, does the value go up?
Maybe it's a once-in-a-lifetime collector's item. I find it rather humorous, though, that people would spend that kind of money for that jersey. Kind of staggering when you think about it.
I just couldn't, you know, maybe if it was LeBron James who made the mistake, you know, it would be a little value to it there. But I just can't see paying for frickin' J.R. Smith.
No, I find that rather bizarre that anybody could even consider making that kind of an expenditure. But what do we know, right?
I guess if it works out, you know, hey, maybe it's just somebody with extra money and they're willing to, you know, kind of take the hit and just have it as part of their collection.
Yeah, well, maybe they made a fortune in FanDuel and then they could take their profits and buy these things.
Yeah, I'm working on that. I won $3 last night. So.
Oh, you see, you're getting close. You're another $29,997 and you're home free.
Yeah, I am almost there. And no, I did not win it in the home run derby because I only managed one because whatever, Mike Trout and Bryce Harper just don't hit home runs for me. But, I did do it again here. I'm sticking with it. I'm going to run Trout and Harper out there every freaking game until something happens. So I got Trout, who's batting second for the Angels tonight, Harper, who's batting first for the Nationals tonight. And then it is third base week for me here. So I'm pairing a third baseman with them every day. In the last 2 days, my odd third baseman has hit home runs. So tonight, my third baseman is Christian Villanueva of the Padres as I go that route. But I see my upcoming lineup here, I have someone who's not starting, so I actually have to go in and make a swap here. Yeah, when I was building my lineup today, you know, they had a lot of what they call value picks for the Cubs against the Reds today. But, man, I was so worried about the weather that I just – the only guy I went with was Ian Hopp. You know, and I'm just worried about that game getting in.
Yeah, they're already predicting heavy thunderstorms, so will it hold off enough for them to get the game in? And it's going to be that way for the next for tomorrow as well, I understand.
So, yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, locally here, they already canceled the White Sox game. You know, the White Sox and A's have already been canceled today. They're going to make it up as a doubleheader tomorrow. So, yeah,
I'm surprised they canceled it because oddly, it seems to have stopped here, even though it's overcast. But maybe they anticipate the rain coming back later tonight.
Yeah, there is supposed to be another round of storms coming through. So, sadly at the money I have left, I don't have a lot of options here. So I'm gonna have to take a flyer.
Careful.
Right here.
Very good with your choices.
Yeah, here's how my lineup ended up. I thought it was pretty obvious that you start Matt Scherzer against the Orioles today. You know, they're one of the worst teams in baseball. He is quite pricey, so it's $12,200 to have him in my lineup. So, you know, right off the bat, I did spend a lot. So I'm looking for value guys just from the start. I'm going with former Cub great Alex Avila as my catcher first baseman. He only cost me $2,000. He's hitting sixth for the Diamondbacks tonight. I have Jose Perella of the Padres at second, cost me $2,700. I'm waiting for that lineup to come out to make sure he's in. Third base is Yarhengis Solarte of the Blue Jays, cost me $3,400. I'm waiting for the Blue Jay lineup as well, so I've got to come back to these and continue to double check. Trey Turner at short, hitting second for the Nationals, cost me $3,900. In my outfield, you know, I went with Teoscar Hernandez because he you know, it seems like I see his name in the highlights and the box score every day doing well. So I figure I'm going to take a shot with him at $3,700, see how it works out. Then my only cub, like I said, is Ian Happ. He cost me $2,600. He's in the 8-hole for them tonight. Gerard Dyson is my third outfielder. Cost me $2,300, hitting 8th for the Diamondbacks. And then my utility guy is Eric Sogard of the Brewers. He's hitting 7th. He cost me $2,100. This is for the, what is it, the 6:05 main our time. So you got about 34 minutes. So I'll have to make sure I go back and check and everything. But just the recap, Scherzer is my pitcher. Avila at the catcher first base spot. Perella at second. Solarte at third. Turner at short. The outfielders are Hernandez, Hop, and Dyson. And my utility guy is Sogard. So there we go. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, the only problem with Happ, of course, is that he's so erratic. I mean, he can go hit 2 homers tonight or strike out 3 times. You never know with him.
Yeah, you know, I figured at $2,600 playing in Cincinnati, which is a really good hitter's park, you know, I thought he was a really good value. I know, you know, one of the guys they were really high on is Chris Bryant tonight. You know, I know you've been just down on him lately and killing him in the emails you sent me, but well, a lot of guys think he's going to be the breakout guy tonight. You know, like I got an email from a guy saying Chris Bryant is one of the studs to have tonight. And he's back in the leadoff spot, so there you go.
He has been hitting a little better lately. We have to do say that, and I can see why they can make that choice because his swing looked a little more fluid to me the last couple of games. Maybe it's because they put him into that leadoff spot. I don't know, but he did hit that triple that the other night and a couple of doubles. So maybe that is a good selection.
So, yeah, they were all over it. You know, and it's one of those things, if the weather wasn't so iffy there, I may have tried to work him into my lineup. You know, I do like Chris Bryant. I think he's a quality hitter. I just can't trust it. It's just too iffy. But, you know, this is how the Cubs lineup looked. I don't know if you saw that. I mentioned Bryant leading off at third. Jason Hayward is second and right. We got Javi Baez hitting third at second. Anthony Rizzo hits cleanup at first. Addison Russell, who is supposed to be another good play tonight, is fifth at short. Kyle Schwarber sixth in left. Wilson Contreras is seventh catching. Hop, of course, like I mentioned, is eighth in center. And then Hendricks is ninth doing the pitching tonight. So, you know, another bit of a strange order for Joe Madden, but I've kind of become used to that as things.
Yeah. Javi doesn't usually bat third. Has he batted third before this season?
You know, maybe randomly he's plugged him in there just because that's how he is, but nothing consistent. So, you know, I mean, I'm surprised Schwarber's not up a little in the lineup. He's been swinging the bat real well, but maybe he didn't want the three left-handers back-to-back, you know, Haywood, Schwarber, Rizzo like that.
Right.
So, he's got him separated by, you know, a right-hander. So, maybe that's the plan.
Schwarber's average is only around 240, 245, but he does has been hitting a long ball lately and some important ones over the last few games. I'm sure he loves to hit in Cincinnati also.
Yeah, you know, they're playing Cincinnati. Here's what the Reds are running out. Jose Peraza's leading off at short. Tucker Barnhart hits second and does the catching. Joe Votto hits third at first. Scooter Gennett is the cleanup guy at second. Eugenio Suarez is fifth at third. Jesse Winker is sixth and right. Adam Duvall is seventh and left. They're going with the old Joe Madden trick here as Matt Harvey's hitting eighth and pitching, and then Billy Hamilton hits ninth in center field. So, yeah, that's the lineup Kyle Hendricks will have to face there. I did read Suarez is another guy. I believe him and Bryant were the 1-2 first baseman today for Daily Fantasy. So he's another guy that people think are going to come through and have a big night. Again, like I said, you know, there's just too much rain in the forecast. And I know I saw they say it's going to lighten up. It's supposed to actually be pretty heavy about the start of the game, but then it's supposed to lighten up the rest of the way. I'm just kind of to the point where, man, maybe they won't even start it. I don't know. So, you know, I took the one shot with Hop. I couldn't plug anybody else in. It was just too big of a risk.
This has been the, in terms of rainouts, I think this has been the worst in the majors for, what, 40 years or so. They had so many rainouts this season.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been rough. You know, and it's always kind of humorous because, you know, people complain about it, but, you know, that's the one thing, you know, you can't control the weather. You know, I mean, I get
that
sports control everything. Yeah, there's not a whole lot you can do there. So, you know, we just got to kind of, you know, kind of see how that goes. So, but yeah, just, you know, just completely strange there. So.
You know, talking about the major leagues, though, I'll tell you one thing that's impressed me is that Atlanta still is holding on to the lead in the NL East. I thought they would have faded by now, but they still have a three-game lead over Washington, 3.5 over Philadelphia. So they're really playing great ball this year.
Yeah, they're hanging tough. You know, I'm interested to see as, you know, it goes along, you know, kind of how their starting pitching goes, because, you know, right now they're getting a lot of really quality starts out of some young guys. And, you know, as you know how it is, I mean, as the season goes on and the pressure builds, you know, those things can get a little more difficult to get out of these guys. So, you know, we'll have to see. I mean, you know, there's the possibility, you know, maybe they'll go out and add a guy. You know, there's going to be some veterans on the market, you know, as, you know, kind of as they're, yeah, composed right now. I'm not sure if they hang on.
The trick is, of course, to continue to play good ball after the All-Star break, which when a lot of the newer teams, the younger teams will start to make their fade. So that'll be interesting to see what happens with Atlanta.
So, yeah, you know, and they did, you know, they did struggle. You know, Fulton Awits has the injury. I don't know if he's back or he should be back. But, you know, he's been a big part there. And they've still been playing pretty good, you know, while he's been gone. So that's, you know, that's kind of impressive for them. But, you know, that, and I know, I think Dan and I were talking about this the other day where, you know, Anibal Sanchez is just kind of, I think he's kind of pitching, as we would say, maybe a little above his pay grade. You know, I'm not quite sure if he's really the, you know, 3-1 starter with a 2.55 ERA and 7 starts and 8 total games. I mean, you know, this was a guy who just kind of couldn't find his way the last few years in Detroit. I mean, here last year his ERA was 6.41. Before the year before that, it was 5.7. So yeah, he's made a big time swing at 34. You know, and you just kind of wonder, you know, does that continue? How all of a sudden, how did he manage this?
You'd be surprised if he can continue with that pace after the All-Star break. But stranger things have happened.
Yeah, you know, because, looking at their rotation, I mean, you know, Mike Soroka pitched for them last night. He's only 20. You know, he's been doing real well. Sean Newcomb is 25. Fulton Awits is 26. And then Julio Teheran, who seems like he's been in the majors a long time, is just 27. So they have a really young core of starting pitchers, which you would like to think as they grow and get better should keep them around for a long time. But, you know, like I said, as you get deeper and deeper into that pennant race, you can find the news tightening a little bit, other things kind of happen there. So you just gotta, you know, it's still a wait and see. I'm not ready to write Washington off like a lot of guys are and give Atlanta the division yet. So.
No, I can't do that. I still think Washington's going to wind up winning the division.
They made the move earlier in the week to grab Kelvin Herrera. Not only does that help their bullpen, but, you know, it really kills Philadelphia, who just demoted their closer to AAA because he was so bad. So now they're doing the closer by committee role. And, you know, it also hurts the Braves in a way because they have a really young bullpen and a really young closer. So, you know, a guy like Herrera could have been a fantastic mentor to that kid as a setup guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, Washington being the punch. So, you know, and I do see here Fulton Awitz is supposed to come off the DL to pitch Saturday. So we'll see if he makes his return.
Yeah, he's got a very, very great, very low ERA, if I remember. Isn't it just a little over 2 something?
Yeah.
I mean, a terrific ERA.
Yeah, he pitched very well. He's at 2.16 through his 14 starts. So, yeah, he's been fantastic. He really has for them. And let's see, what was the injury? An injury was right tricep tightness. So you got to hope that's something that doesn't linger. You know, sometimes with a pitcher, that can kind of hang around. So
yeah, for sure. Well, at least he didn't get injured taking his pants off.
Yeah, you know, I took my pants off this morning, you know, to change clothes, and I didn't hurt myself. So that was
okay,
a big plus,
right?
There. But yeah, you know, sadly, some guys have. Yeah, you know, I don't understand how that happened, but you know, hey.
There's been some odd ones for the Cubs over the years. Didn't Sammy Sosa go on the list for DL one time for sneezing in the clubhouse?
Yes.
And he hurt his back.
Yeah, well, what I'm thinking, maybe you and I can find these things. When my grandfather became an older gentleman and had some issues, you know, with the back bending over and stuff, he had these two, they were basically just kind of wooden sticks that, you know, grasped the side of your pants. And he had two of them so he could get them on his legs and pull them up. Maybe that's something we could look into to get Brandon Morrow, or maybe, you know, if he's married, maybe his wife could just off his pants for him, you know, but
fluke injury could have cost the Cubs a big win, as it turned out.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what the hell he was doing that he tweaked his pants, tweaked his back, taking his pants off. I mean, how many different ways are there to take your pants off?
Not many, but that's a strange, strange thing. Of course, we've seen pitchers and go on the DL for punching a wall in the clubhouse a few times.
Yeah.
Which is really an idiotic injury.
I was very disappointed by that, because if LeBron James can play in the NBA Finals with a broken hand, I don't know why this guy can't pitch with a broken pink. I just don't get it.
Me either. Yeah, well, it wasn't a real severe break, though, to James, right? It wasn't a super break to the hand.
I don't believe it was a break at all. I think it was just another, you know, every time he's lost the NBA Finals, there's been an injury that's came out after the finals. Well, we didn't want to say anything while that was going on, but this happened. So, you know.
Right. Yeah. How many times have we seen that before?
Yeah. So we'll have to see. But you know what I found? I just can't figure this out again. This is one of those things that just baffle me when it comes to commentators and people to cover the game is, you know, immediately if a team struggles or they hit a bad stretch, the immediate thing that they want a team to do is strip it down and sell it all and go get prospects for all your players. And I mentioned yesterday to Dan that apparently the Mets have actually bought this idea now. You know, it's been pitched to them. They started off 11-1. They looked fantastic. And then, of course, being the Mets, the injuries hit. And, you know, now, you know, everybody's been saying since then, well, you know, you got to sell these guys. You got to get rid of these guys. And apparently they're now taking calls on their big stud pitchers, Jacob DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard, which I think is really stupid. But now apparently the new team that has to sell are the Minnesota Twins. You know, they are sub 500 at 33-37, but they're in the AL Central, which really only puts them, you know, maybe 6 or 7 games out of first place.
Right.
Believe it or not, they're in third. They're in third
with that record.
But yeah, so now this team has to sell because, you know, Joe Mauer's in the last year of his contract and Eduardo Escobar's in the last year of his contract. And, you know, it's just kind of like, wait, why can't they just win 6 or 7 games in a row and get right back in the race? I mean, couldn't that just as easily happen instead of selling your guys off?
Yeah, probably unlikely, because it looks like Cleveland starting to play good ball and pulling away a little bit from the rest of the teams in the league.
But remember last year, they said this exact same thing about the Twins last year. And, you know, they had went out and they acquired Jaime Garcia, and then they lost a few games in a row and they decided to trade him. You know, and they were like, okay, good, the Twins are going to break it down. They're going to do what they need to do. Then they went on a winning streak and ended up as the second freaking wild card team.
Yeah, I suppose it could. Well, I could see it happening more with them than anything happening with the Mets, who are three teams ahead of them, and they're 8 games below 500. So I think you can pretty well rule the Mets out from any kind of potential of making a wild card for this year. But like you said, the Twins certainly can do it.
You know, it doesn't mean the Mets are a bad team. I mean, you're looking at these pitchers. You know, Jacob DeGrom is one of the best pitchers in the National League and probably baseball. You know, I know Syndergaard has the finger injury right now. But, you know, I mean, you're giving up on guys who are legitimate aces in a rotation, and you have two of them. He struggled to find one, and you have two, and you're going to deal them.
And what would they get in return?
Well, that's what I mean. If I'm not getting 5 or 6 major league prospects back that are guaranteed that I'm going to see in the major leagues, I'm not making either of those deals.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that they would consider trading those two guys. But you said that what the speculation is that they're in the market now for making these kind of moves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the quote that was used yesterday is that the Mets are taking calls.
Well, you can take calls, but it doesn't mean you're going to accept the deal. But unless it's a blockbuster type thing that would help them immeasurably, I don't think they're going to trade either of those two guys.
So, but yeah, I just, you know, I just to me, it's just kind of ridiculously stupid that this is the first conclusion we jump to when a team starts to have issues. Well, you know, they've got to break it all down. You know, we can't continue to play this way, and you know, it's got to go, you know, got to go this way or that way or however it works out. It's like, why?
We've seen over the years a few teams give up in September when they're only 3 or 4 games behind. I think I mentioned one time that this happened to the White Sox quite a few years ago, but they're only 3 or 4 games behind in September, a legitimate shot to continue and make it into the playoffs, and they started selling off their players, which made, to me, absolutely no sense.
So, yeah, you know, but, and then the opposite side of that, I mean, how many times have you heard that this guy is a great prospect and he gets here and it doesn't work out? Now, you know, the White Sox made all those trades, and, man, those guys look fantastic in the minors. I mean, Dylan Cease just got promoted to Double-A because he looks so good. You know, right. Eloy Jimenez looks like a monster hitting in the minor league. You know, Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito have had their struggles at the major league level, but they, you know, they look like they're guys who are going to be solid middle-of-the-rotation guys. But, yeah, like Michael Kopech now has been promoted to Triple-A, and all of a sudden he's having trouble. You know, he was can't-miss at Double-A. He comes up a level, and, oh, wait a minute.
No.
So, you know, I mean, you're talking about guys who are 19, 20-year-old kids. You don't know what the hell they're going to be like when they're 24, 25 and coming up.
No. The odds are that out of all those prospects, how many are going to actually make it to the major leagues and be productive? One, two?
You know, and that's where, you know, the Cubs were really lucky. You know, whoever the scouting department was fantastic, because, you know, you look at it and it's, you know, Bryant is here, Schwarber is here, Baez is here, Almora is here, even though they hate his guts. You know, I mean, they really hit on these guys, and they were all top 10 draft picks. And, I mean, you know, obviously it doesn't take a genius to be sitting there at number 2 and go, yeah, I'll take Chris Bryant, the big stud hitter. But, you know, there were some questions about Schwarber when they drafted him. You know, there were a lot of people who didn't think he would hit in the major leagues. You know, and obviously he's not a 300 hitter, but he's got tremendous power, and, you know, it's worked out well. You know, and it's a big plus. I mean, they did a fantastic job. You know, so did the Astros. It took the Astros a little longer. But, you know, guys like Alec Bregman and George Springer and, you know, those guys, you know, some of the other guys they mixed in through the draft, I know they took a few more pitchers than the Cubs did. So, you know, that's possibly why it took them a little longer to get there. But, yeah, you know, I mean, if you don't hit, you know, I mean, you know, you look at the kids who were just drafted, you know, or going back to 2017, who was the number one pick in the draft? Do you remember? Where is he now?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. It's very tough. The major leagues are tough. And that, as you pointed out, though, it shows how good the Cubs' scouting must have been. Look at the two players they finally got rid of who were tearing Torres, for example, tearing it up with the Yankees. Another Cub.
Yeah, that's not about him.
And, of course, Jimenez will probably be up with the White Sox sooner or later. He's, like you said, doing very well in Double A. But we'll see what happens when they move him up a level. But he looks like a can't-miss kind of prospect.
So, all right, well, here, just so you know, the number one pick in the draft in 2017 was Royce Lewis, you know, made by the Minnesota Twins. So, yeah, there you go. He was the draft pick. It looks like he is playing – he's actually playing in the Midwest League with the Cedar Rapids Colonels. Let me see if I can actually find
that class. That's Class A, right? Is that Class A?
Class A. Yeah. Let me see if I can actually find some actual stats on Royce Lewis here. Yeah, he's played 55 games this year for Class A Cedar Rapids in the Midwest League. He's doing pretty well. He's hitting .302 with 6 homers and 35 RBIs. He has 16 stolen bases as well. Yeah, maybe not the best defender. He's got a fielding percentage of .944. He's made 11 errors in 50 games at shortstop. So maybe we got to work on the defense a little bit.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
You know,
horrible percentage.
Right. You know, even so, this kid is 19. What's his major league ETA? You know, is he 3 years out? Is he 4 years out? You know, we don't know what's going to happen to him when he gets to Double A or Triple A.
No.
Is he possibly five
no.
years out because of adjustment time?
Or is he 0 years out and not going to make it to the majors, which is
right.
more than likely.
Like, you know, you've used the term a few times here. Does he turn into a 4A player where, you know, he's a great Triple A player, but he can't hit the major league level? So,
yeah,
you know,
a lot of those.
You know, it's fantastic to talk about all these guys and be like, oh, yeah, you know, you need to sacrifice your roster to go out and get all these guys and, you know, rebuild this team and save your franchise. But it doesn't always work.
No.
So, you know, I mean, how many years have the Reds been rebuilding and they're nowhere close to contending?
And you take a look at their lineup. I mean, you know, they got some tough ball players in their lineup. They got Joey Votto. They got Scooter Gennett, who is tearing it up this year, having a great year, and always kills the Cubs. So they got some talent in their lineup, too.
Yeah, here, I pulled up Jimenez stats just so we know. He's played 55 games for the White Sox Double-A. He's hitting .317 with 10 home runs and 42 RBIs. So... He is hitting quite well. He's at Charlotte. He's at Charlotte. Oh, they actually. Yeah. They must have just moved him up because they have him listed with the Charlotte Knights in AAA, but his stats so far this year are from AA in the Southern League. So maybe he just went up.
Probably did. I think I remember they just moved him up. We'll have to see how he does now. He looks like a can't miss prospect.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantees. There's no guarantees.
No. You know, I mean, that's kind of, you know, just sadly, it's kind of one of those things. I mean, you know, it looks – it looks great, and you see it, and you're like, okay, here we go. You know, this guy is it, and you know they flame, you know, they'll flame out, or you know, an injury happens, you know, God forbid, or you know, they just get up against that top level of competition, and whoops. Hey, guess what? I can't handle the curve, can't handle the slider, can't handle the change. You know, one of those things. You know, it's difficult, but it's so weird how, you know, every expert is just so quick on to say, hey, you guys got to tear this down, get rid of any quality players you have, and bring in as many prospects as you can get. Okay.
You don't know. What's interesting to me, by the way, John, and talking about the current major leagues, is that there are so many batters that are on the major league roster who are hitting, what, 220, 225, 230. Years ago, that would not have happened. That would never have happened 20 years ago. You wouldn't see anybody in the majors with that low a level of a batting average. But now it seems to be more prevalent, much more prevalent.
That's because analytics ruined the game. Analytics made batting average a non-existent stat. Because it's all power. Analytics focuses on just power and how many home runs you're hitting and how hard you're hitting the ball. You know, like I heard somebody talking the other day about the exit velocity of a home run. Now, I don't care if a home run lands in the first row of the bleachers at Wrigley Field or goes out of the stadium. It all counts the exact same. I don't care how hard you hit it. But they're so focused on it that they're losing the little introspective parts of the game that matter. I mean, when was the last time you saw a guy try to hit to the right side to move a runner from second to third with, you know, nobody out?
That's what's missing. I always loved situation. I've always been a great admirer of situational hitting. And it used to be a lot more of that type of thing years ago, but not so much now.
I heard former Rockies GM Dan O'Dell had a great explanation with this. The reason you don't see a lot of it anymore is because they don't pay you in the majors to do that. They pay you to hit home runs. So guys aren't interested in learning these little aspects of the game. They want to hit home runs. So,
because
I was trying to think, I was telling Dan a story. I was watching an MLB Network game with Jim Cott and Bob Costas doing it. And, you know, Jim Cott had a career that spanned like four decades in baseball. He was talking about how a guy ahead of the count right now, this guy should be looking for something on the outer half of the plate to shoot to the right side, either get a single to right field or ground out. You know, if he grounds out, he moves the guy over to third. This guy swung so hard, he almost spun himself under the ground in the batter's box. He had no idea about trying to hit the right field or anything like that. He wanted to hit a home run. So I thought that was like the perfect analysis there.
You would think that during a game situation, though, they would be smart enough to change their batting approach, especially if they have two strikes on them.
But not at all.
Doesn't seem to happen. Surely doesn't seem to happen with the Cubs.
Hold on. There you go. Anytime you want to go listen to this, dot com.